Okay. I'll tell you just an interesting machshava. Really on the Parshas Vayishlach, which is nageya very, very much to Parshas Vayishlach. We find that Bilha and Zilpa were called shvachas. Right? It says, "Vayosef meshtei hashvachas v'esyaldeha nishoina." Right? "Es leya v'iladeha achroinim v'es Yosef z'rochel achroinim." So they were shvachas. Later on, we don't find anything like that, because if they were shvachas, so then the Don Naftali God Nosher would be avodim, because they would be the children of shvachas. In Parshas Vayeshev, we find that there were times that Yosef had on the brothers, right? Vayove Yosef is the boss of Ro. So one of the three times he had was that they called the Don of Tolly God Nosher, they called him Avodah. Karen Lachayim Avodah. Right? Because of that, Rashi brings Le'evet Nimka Yosef. So exactly what was Takadah Matzav of the Shvotim? Were the Bil and Zilpah called Shvotis? Were the their children called Avodim? What exactly we see throughout the Torah? The Nosi, right? Livnei Don, Livnei God, Livnei Yosher. I mean, they were all regular Shvotim. So the Chazal tells us that when it says Vayishka v'Ruvein is Bilha Pilegi Shoviv, so what it means is Kolhoim Ruvein Chota Ena Latoya. What happened? Yaakov Avinu took his bed and he brought it into the oil of Bilha. So Reuven had the Gevaldike Tainas. What's the oil of Bilha? Sof Kol Sof, Im Mi Hoysa, Tzoro Lach Hoysa, so she should be or Im Achoysa Im Mi Hoysa, Tzoro Lach Imi, so the Shifchas Achoysa Imi should be Tzoro Lach Imi. In other words, he had taina that it was unjust, unfair. But what was Taka Yaakov Avinu's kavona in going into the oil of Bilha, after all? It should be Taka that he should go to the oil of Leah. And Leah was no longer a snua, she was already an ahuva by that time. All the years of the tainas and the sinner went were over already. No. It could very well be that what Yaakov wanted to be koiveya was that the shvachas were no longer shvachas, and he wanted to be koiveya that they were wives, and they were noshim, they were imohas, better yet, and the mele they don't have any din of shivcha, and the children don't have a din of Avodin. To show that's so, that's Mir. That's where you have the Pisco Yam Tzaposik. Vayeloch Vayhi Vishkoin Yisrael Boret Zahi Vayeloch Ruvein Vayishka Vezbul HaPilege Shove Vayishma Yisrael Vayiu B'nai Yaakov Shnei Moser. That's the Posik. Vayiu B'nai Yaakov Shnei Moser is part of the same Posik. What's the connection? And so she already brings that. That shows you that Kol Ha'omer Reuven Chotein El Toya Kulan Tzadikim. But Ken Zayin that for Yuvin Yaakov Shnei Moser is more than just on Reuven. The emphasis is on Don Naftali God Noshe. Why? Because the Balt we learn out from here that Yaakov Avinu was Kaveya Mitosei Eitzel Bilho. So that showed that he was mischashiv with with the Bilhan Zilpa as Noshim Gemuras, and that they weren't Shvachis any longer, like it says in the previous Seder, over and over again, Shvachis, Shtei Shvachis of Yasachad Osa Yolodah. Understand? But they were Noshim Gemuras. Once the Noshim Gemuras said that children not Taka Shvotim Lagamri, without any restriction, on the same level as all the other Shvotim. And that's why it says in the same Pasuk, Vayu B'nei Yaakov Shnei Moser, the regular 12 equal children, and they all have the same Kedusha, the same Yichus, the same standing as B'nei Yaakov. It's not Zachmir that that's the, what we always talk about Reuven, but what was the Kavon of Yaakov, that nobody ever speaks about. Could be that this is the Kavon of Yaakov, and throughout Parashas Miketz we find over and over again Shnei Moser Anachnu Bnei Yeshechot, right, Nochnu Kolona Bnei Yeshechot, or how they came Kseder Vayavoyu Bnei Yaakov Asorah. The numbers are mentioned constantly, and the reason is to make them no different than the others. There's no longer any chiluk. And that was Gufa, the child in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. The Shvatim had tainas, they called them avodim, because this wasn't yet mufursim, it wasn't yet in Miskabel, that the regular of the Shvatim, and they had a right to call them avodim, maybe minadin. They didn't call them avodim, also Shem Gnai, Hakor L'chaver Yevad, is Yibbenidu. It's one of the worst offenses in the world. So they didn't do that, chas v'sholom, that the Shvatim used derogatory language and insulted anyone in the world. You don't insult a person, a human being. There's no reason to insult him, even if he's worthy of being insulted. It's time to go and insult a person. It's a midirah. So they weren't koyril l'chayim avodim in the sense that they call them in a derogatory way, you ever do. Chas v'sholom. They held that they had a din of Eved. Yosef held that they were no longer avodim, that the din of Eved went off. Lagamri. And when did the din of Eved go off? By Vayishkov, by when Yaakov Avinu was Kaveh and Mitose Eitzel Bila. That's when the din of Eved disappeared. Chen, they were no longer avodim, but they were. They were Shiftei Koh. It's just when I thought of this, I held that like one of the last mysteries, so to speak, in these parashas was cleared up. Now we see the whole Shaka V'Tari, the Yichus of the Shvatim, and why all these psukim tell us the numbers, Shnei Moser, and what was the Kavon of Yaakov, and what was the Machloikis, Yosef and the brothers, whether they were avodim or not avodim. It all revolves around the Shaila about the status of Bilhan Zilpa, which now is, as of this time, they weren't, there was no longer any chiluk. I don't know if Yaakov Avinu told them that this was my kavon and this is what I did, and the melai was kaveh like this. And these are dvorim, so to speak. They're not things which are mefursim. So the things which you have to v'haraya. If Yaakov would have announced it, so then Reuven wouldn't have had a problem with it. He would have been kavon. The Kabbalah, that Indian, it's very important. Why should Reuven be object to it? What? Yeah, it could be Mavki. It's not the Pshat. If it was be after Matan Torah, so it would be totally in the Chalois de Eved. But it's before Matan Torah. You could change the status. Before Matan Torah, it's not totally in the din that came during the later. It's totally the Yaakovinu. It's up to him to be kaveya. If he took off the Shem Shvachas, so he took off the Shem Avodim too. Just like he could be Mavkiya the Shem Shitri, Mavkiya the Shem Evan. Exactly so. One is totally in the other. Yeah?
When it came to when Yosef was put into the bar, when Reuven didn't want Yosef put into the bar, it wasn't one of his honest, just because he was responsible, his father was going to have tightness on him. It wasn't for his honest for Yosef.
It's interesting. A beautiful point that you raised. The Torah says, why did Reuven try to save Yosef? L'man hatzil Yosef miyodam la'ashiva yaloviv. And that's one of the cases that Chazal say in that Mefursim Dikei Medrash, ilu yoda Reuven. If Reuven would have known that the Torah said, L'man hatzil Yosef miyodam la'ashiva yaloviv, so Reuven would have gone besupim of Mcholos, and he would have made an old parade. Such a historical, such an important mindset that the Torah praises. The Torah says this was the kavon of Reuven. Reuven did the mindset, but he didn't realize the vast importance attached to this mindset. How great it's considered that the Torah praised that l'man hatzaloisim yodam lashiv alavim ilu yoda Reuven. If Reuven would have known, he would have gone at besupim of Mcholos. That's what Chazal say. So l'chayre there's a tzad gunai in that mindset. Why? Because Laman Hatzaloisim Yodam Lashiva Yalov, if he wanted it out of himself to show that he's not a bad person because his father was angry with him and upset with him, so he would go and show his father that I'm a good person, I'm not a bad person. So in other words, he saved Yosef Lashiva Yalov, not to understand. So vice dois that Chazal are telling us that when a person does a good thing, right, we don't have to tight shirois and impute sveikus and bad motives to his good thing. The person does a good thing, it's a good thing. And we have to nemon, take it at face value. It's a good thing and we have to praise it when we have to see all the good there is in the ma'aseh. And not to say, I know the reason why he did it. He did it because he meant himself, because he meant the tayalta. We have no right to do that.
I find that shown by the chayis that they go through to make taxes.
And he's talking about the Romans, and he's talking about Soini Yisrael, anti-Semit.
Marcus, he's supposed to put bad things on bad people. He's supposed to
put racism. Right. So Soini Yisrael, when we see the Romans who did such terrible avlis, and they killed some of the Yidden, and they were machir the Beis HaMikdash, and they did all the terrible things in the world, and they still do. What do we start finding a schus? Oh, they made a bathhouse. So Shimon Yochai, that's a schus. The Sha'achmar a schus. They made the bathhouse for us. How about they made the bathhouse for us? Because whatever they did, good. Because for us, that's because we're the world, and they're like the understand the bacteria that that chew up the decaying material. They do it for us. But they're kavona. That's what the Shimon Yochai is saying. What? Oh? Yeah. Einichanami, so that's what motivated Reuven. Adrabi, he had no sentence. Reuven said, Lo Yidlo Asirchan Elavi. And that's why he did it, Lashiva Elovit. And the Melech wasn't a pure 100% Kavonin. In Afel Pikain, Ilu Yoda Reuven. Because the Torah says, L'man Hatzel. We have to take L'man Hatzel, Oisim Yodam, L'man Hatzel, that. Okay? And then I'll mention two things when I get to this. First of all, I'll mention about Reb Shimon Yochai with Eder. You know, we sing Mois Tzuri Yeshuasa after Chanukah Licht mention. So, you know, I think I mentioned it the other day. In the end, the last stanza is Chasov Zroya Kotshecha Bekor V'Keitz HaYeshua. So in the Siddurim, there's a sanitized version, you know. It says, Asay no man shemecha liyas lona teshua. Ki orcha lona hayashua v'enkeitz lo me'erua v'cheit pesha v'gam resha, something like that. But the real nusach is anything but that. The real nusach is like this. Chasov Zroya Kotshecha Bekor V'Keitz HaYeshua. Nikmas dama vodecha me'uma harashoa. כי אור חלון הישוע ואין קץ למהרו דחי אדמין בצל צלמין הקם לא נראה ישיבה. So there's really sharp biting words against Edom. Nekayim nikmas dama v'decha meyum ha'arsho and dechei admoin v'tzel tzalmoin. But still, being under the power of the mighty hand of Edom, so very often the Rabbonim, the wise Rabbonim, you know, took the safer path and covered up certain things from the Siddur and from other things. But when the Shimon Yochai was talking about the, heard people talking about the Milos of Edom, he wanted to make sure that nobody gets the wrong idea that Edom is supposed to be thought of as having a Milo. But Reuven, the Halo, Reuven, Avada, even though it was this and was that, I tell you, I wanna tell you over this Yisoid Rabbi, and you could Chazer Rain. I had this discussion with people a couple of days ago, and Mas Chohoya Kachoya, right? We still will change some details so to protect the innocent or the guilty over there. But Mas Chohoya Kachoya, it was a very bitter fight in a certain mishpacha. And the children were split from the parents, the married children, and it was gefelach. The tainas, the words, and the mood was, you know, just getting worse and worse. Vayayayim, and one of the parents had an operation. An operation was needed. And that parent was in the hospital for a couple of days. And lo and behold, the child with whom the relations were perhaps worse, as with all the of all the children, came up, the married couple came up to the hospital, him and her, and they brought a balloon with a greeting card, and they stayed there for 45 minutes. A nice long visit in the middle of the visit, one of them had to go out and repark the car, so actually it wasn't 45 minutes, it was only 10 minutes at the beginning, maybe, and 10 minutes at the end, but in the middle, the couple of minutes was out reparking the car. And I have to... Okay. Yeah. After the parent was home from the hospital, so I was sort of a mediator. And I got a call from one of the parents. Look at how terrible they treat me. Look what kind of business it is. And they thought that they could just make believe nothing happened, because they made some quick rush visit to the hospital, in and out. Since then they never called to find out how I am. Since then they never asked anything about me. How long ago was this meiser? 5 days ago. Since then? Okay. And all kinds of tainas, and they touched up every little thing terribly. When I heard them on the phone, so, you know, as they described it to me, my first initial impression was, yeah, there was something very bad. It was just a superficial show of loyalty, which was meaningless in the light of all the bitterness. It was another avla added onto all the first avlas. Hoisif Rasho al Rishos. Shut. So I call up the children and I asked them, and they said, yeah, they made a visit, and they hoped that the visit accomplished a lot, and they brought a balloon, and they brought a... Okay, I discussed it with them. Then I called back the parents, I asked them, tell me something. What do you want from the children? What are they supposed to do? oh, they have to make an apology for all these terrible things they said, and they have to admit that they were wrong, and they have to do this. So I told them, look, when somebody does a nice thing to you, they came up and visited, they brought you a balloon, they brought a greeting card, they were there, even though they walked out, that was the whole mindset, how they walked out in the middle and had to come back, park the car, it's called walking out. So I said, they did a nice mindset, it was a beautiful gesture, it was a sign of peace. You know, the Indians in America used to come with a pipe smoking, that's the symbol they meant peace. And if they held an arrow, that's the symbol they meant war. They came with the peace pipe. They came with a balloon. It's a sign of peace. They came. You have to take it at face value. You can't take a good action and impute bad motives. Our father there, Rabbeinu Shlomo, is his way of shutting up, and it has this a maisa that's totally perfect, has a higher value, and if it's a little bit less than totally perfect, it has less than a value. That's for the Rabbeinu Shlomo's cheshbonis. That's not for us. When you see someone doing a friendly mindset to you, a gesture to show that they want to make up, a gesture to show that they want to show respect or show love or show anything. Don't say that it has a list of conditions attached to it. It has to have a formal apology, it has to have this, it has to have that. You take a nice act, an act of friendship, an act of peace, at face value. And that's it. Give it the greatest chashivas in the world. Treat it like a jewel, like a diamond. You yank it. So, actually, I had the water partner on the phone. And the other one I hear in the background screaming, that, warning the partner who was with me on the phone not to be convinced and not to be taken in, you know, by the rabbi's sales pitch. I finished with one. I said, okay, now give me the other one. I gave him each separate, each one with his own nusach and style so that it should be more convincing. But it's a klal godel miyoid, I say. If you come in peace, accept it at face value. And then many, many times we have at the end of Parshas Miketz also the Shvatim visit Yosef, and they were afraid what kind of reception they would get, and they rearranged the matanos, and they made sure everything was nice and presented nicely and so on, and they were still afraid, who knows, they were all finally when they sat down, Vayishtu, Vayishkru, we might, even though they didn't know yet anything, they were margish that it was a peaceful meeting. There's a tendency among people who are have bad, stressed relations with each other. Take any sign of goodwill and twist it around and distort it and emasculate it, just rob it of its value. And that shouldn't be done. It's a big thing. No matter how much you read different chazal into the Maisa with Reuven, but sof kol sof, you state ilu yoda Reuven, that it would say, l'man hatzilo yisayim yoda, v'ashiva aloviv, that's it. We're not mechuyev to look at anything more. It's an action that gives eternal credit to Reuven. It gives him chashivus, and it's all chusay, and fatik anesik. We're not mechuyev to go any deeper and to read any improper motives. And I want to tell you, it's not just a little nice taish in the pasuk, Rabbi Yisai, but it's a lifetime lesson. It's an important thing. There's all kinds of different situations in life where people have incidents and trouble in their relationships with others, and it may be in a Shakespearean play on the stage, where they practice what to say 100 times until it's said properly in the right tones and the right language, right costumes, you know. Where somebody will make this dramatic apology and dramatic charote, but in real life, withdrawal from an embattled relationship takes place in little hints, in little tiny, barely noticeable gestures. That's all a person is willing to do when they're ready to reconcile. Do you understand? When they're ready to reconcile, they don't come forward and bow deeply and graciously and say, "Ich weiß was." Chotosi, Ovisi, Poshati, etc., etc. But they do little, barely perceptible gestures, which the other side should be keenly aware to notice and to accept, and to be ready to open the door, the Pesach Kehuda Shomara, and then from there on it becomes a Pischa Shalulam. And that's how things like that start. Always. In real life, it doesn't start the other way unless one of the parties is a professional diplomat who has years of training, you know, is very, very skilled at saying things that he really doesn't mean just because it serves a particular purpose. And those types of apologies, of course, now sound much more dramatic, but they're usually worthless. I was talking the other week about the subject, the world, life. Right? What's the existence? What's the olam all about? And I mentioned that we started off just very, very briefly with the hanocha that there's so many bad things going on. There's so much tzoras in life. And the world seems to be just like a continuous flow of tzoras. And the best things turn sour. It's just a history. You look at Tanakh, but forget about Tanakh, anything. They open a daily paper, Lahavdul, and you see only trouble, only problems. Everything seems to go wrong. I said that the yisoid of the Bria, Moshe Chaim Lutzatis' words, is that the Rabbeinu Shalom created people lehetiv lebruov. That, by the way, is from Chazal, Medrash. Lehetiv lebruov, Kunei Zohar, so, and the Hatova could only come. This is the Moshe Chaim Lutzatis' chiddush. That it can only come in a form which is doime l'tuvah shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because otherwise it's not toiv, otherwise it's not kulay toiv, it's limited toiv, being a nivra, and it's not anywhere related to the ultimate toiv, which is Hashem Yisburach. And the only way that that could happen is if it's doime, up till it's possible for a nivra to be doime, to the Tuva Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for that, it has to be self-created, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the cause of his own toiv. That's something that was given to him by someone else. So too, a person has to create his own good. He has to create his own shleimus. He has to create his own tachlis. And mela, the toiv that he'll experience is something that comes from him and not something that's given to him, and that gives it its maila. Otherwise it would have a chisorin in it, and it wouldn't be toiv, it would be not kulay toiv, it would be partially toiv, which is not toiv at all. Okay? That's the beginning musak. Everything else flows from that. In order for that to happen to a person, so he has to be in a world with problems. Because if there are no problems, then there's no, then he's like a machine, a robot. Anything that happens is just simply a mechanical experience. It happened by itself. He didn't make it happen. He didn't create it. He didn't cause it to happen. The only time he causes it to happen is when, without him, it would not have happened. And since the good thing happened with him, and without him it wouldn't have happened, that means without his effort, there wouldn't have been a good thing, there would have been a bad thing. So basically, the world is a world of bad things, and we're here to make the bad things become good things. Do you understand? So therefore, when we look at the world, automatically, we're looking at a situation without our intervention would be bad. Therefore, basically, for the world to function and to produce what it's supposed to produce, it has to be basically bad. Huh? That sounds too convincing, and you probably think there's some flaw in the reasoning. Right? Think of it. I'll give you about 3 weeks to try to figure out some slight flaw. Too simple, right? Because if I'm supposed to make the good happen, that means if I wouldn't have done it, then the good wouldn't have happened. Right? That means the basic metzius wouldn't turn out to be good. There has to be intervention from somebody who's trying to make it good through his bechirah, and through his seichel, through his shlemus. It just wouldn't have happened on its own. So when the pasuk says vayar helakimis kol shiosa v'hinei toiv miyoid, sure it's toiv. It's toiv because it functions to produce that toiv, which is the ultimate purpose of the bria. So there, the machinery is there. Okay, and we can't say, you know, nothing would have happened. Of course, nothing would happen if the machinery is not working. But the machinery is working. There are people, and there's nature, and there's all kinds of nivroy, and things are going to happen. And if things could only happen and turn to be good through bechira, unless it's the mechanical part of the bria, which nothing is really mechanical, Rabbi say, because you take a look at rains. It's a wonderful thing when it rains, right? So then the plants could grow. Nasati matar arzichem bi'ito yoyer malkosh. But what happens when people don't deserve? Is Odom ayin lava deso adoma. So Rashi brings over there that what does it mean, the Odom ayin? That there's no Odom who appreciates the tuv kishamim, and therefore the motor doesn't happen. So the rain doesn't happen even without. It doesn't happen if there's no one who's lirais betuv shomim, who appreciates it, who makes it happen through his tefillas. Right? The absence of toiv also has a damaging effect, not just the presence of ra. That we see clear.
Rabbi said this is all based on the newspaper, but let's say we didn't have a newspaper, so we say we wrote ra.
If a person, you know, closes his eyes, that doesn't mean it's dark outside. What happens? It happens whether you know it or not. The newspaper.
It can be potting. Like,
newspaper reporters, of course, report sensational news, and mostly sensational news is yeah. So they'll give a greater emphasis than type. You know, they won't tell you how many people woke up in the morning and brushed their teeth. But what the. In Africa, there's 30 million people died of a certain machlo in the last 2-3 years. In 80% of the medinas in the world, people hardly have what to eat. And there's tremendous poverty and deprivation. Those things, they're not isolated incidents like the single accident in the highway.
Those are just statistics. People, we don't see anyone die from starvation.
That's true. That's true. If you if you sit on Ocean Parkway, but if you sit here in the yeshiva and there's a steady stream of people who come to you day and night without a hefsek, and they'll all show you that they have they don't have the means to keep body and soul together, or to marry off their children, or to pay for the sick people in their family, or right, the thousands of individuals who have a terrible sorrows, and you'll tell the person, wait a minute, and then you'll run off to Ocean Parkway and sit down among the checker players or card players who seem to be oblivious to the rest of the world, especially when they have no newspapers with them. So the Teretz is, how do I say, that, you know, what there was, it's interesting. There was a big movement in the 20s called the anarchism. Right? There was a whole movement of people who claimed that all the troubles in the world are here because of governments. And governments essentially create all the problems. And basically human nature is good, and everybody would be at peace and happy with each other. But if not for all the governments that interfere with people's lives, and therefore we have to get rid of all the governments, and everybody would return to their basic good nature. And anarchy is the Lamaisa, though there was a little shtickle steer in their claim, because how do you get rid of governments? So they had a plan. The plan was to take lots and lots of guns and one big day shoot up all the government officials, and once you wipe them all out, there won't be any more government. So, of course, when people start doing that kind of thing, it's anything but an indication of the basic good that there is in human nature. Chazal had a different view. Chazal said, "Hispalu b'shloim shel malchus." People essentially are vicious and they have to be controlled, and they're going to do bad things, and they'll eat each other up, and the strong will destroy the weak, and then the strong will fight with each other to the point where it will be the world will be filled with chomas. And that's what we see all over the world, is there's ra wherever you go, and the simple, it has to be like that. Because the only real toiv that comes is through the exercise of bechira. And the exercise of bechira could be done with toiv sometimes by basic human hergeshim that come to a good person. But very often it's not like that. And the real toiv has to come through a system that is used to control the evil nature that does exist in a person. And that system, that ultimately is the system of the Torah, right? That's what the world is. That's the basis of the construction of the world. And Mimela, the story of the world, Rabbi say, now is no longer a story, whether it's reported by the history books or the Torah or the Havdol, the newspapers. I should say the Havdol between the history books and the Torah as well. But wherever it's reported, it seems to be a story of human failure. No, the basic story of the world is a story of human success, of how in these conditions there were so many people who chose to struggle and to overcome the forces of Ra within them and outside of them, and to achieve Toiv and Shlemus and Rosan Hashem and grow to be Tzaddikim. And to accomplish it and to continue Klal Yisrael. I mean, this is what we're celebrating, part of what we're celebrating in the Nesaf Chanukah, by the way. And I want to point this out. It's not just the Nisim v'Nefloyes that happened, right? Masate Giborim b'yad Chaloshim v'yad Miyatim, not just the oil burning 8 days, not just the Chanukah HaMikdash, which is the reason why we have a Suda on Chanukah. Right, Loiter Mo, No, not just all these things, but there's something that runs much deeper, and that's much more important and more basic. You want to hear what it is? It's the fact that there are tzaddikim, and that there are tahorim, and there are oiske sorasecha, right, in Klal Yisrael, and there are people who are willing to stand up and to struggle and to give their lives for Torah and their lives for the Kvod Shamayim. That in itself is a hafladika, the event of a hafladika importance. You understand? And the worst circumstances, but there are people whose commitment to Torah is so genuine and so real that there's nothing that could shake it. There's nothing that the person would be able to say to himself, it's true, I like Torah, but up to a point. Not done that if I'm going to have to deprive myself of all pleasure, or have to make myself a social reject, or have to perhaps get hurt or killed or something like that. Right? But a person whose commitment to Torah is so strong that he'll say, this is Torah, but Shire, there's no alternative. There's no Metzias, there's no Havamina to do anything differently. And therefore, if there's a Deus Hashmad, or my best friends are defecting from Torah, or all I get from Torah is Bizyonis, it means absolutely nothing to him, because what's an Afkamina? You don't cast aside the truth for falsehood. If falsehood, it has absolutely no meaning to you whatsoever, no value. You understand? And that's one of the nisim of Chanukah, and it's a nest that we have to learn from, because all the other nisim, so you can't make them happen. What should we say? Rachmanu yasal on nisim kasher osal aveseinu. Right, the whole shaila: how could you be misfal for a nest? So that we can't make happen. We could only be misfal to the Baruch Shalom to make it happen. Yeah. But the other nest is a nest that's the fact that the Ratz Hadikim and Tahorim and Oiskev Sesech. I want to point out, it's an interesting thing. I once had a conversation with somebody, and we were talking. I had a very, very great schus to be able to be in a certain way close to Moshe Tzatzal, and to see the neflois of Poshet is Shleimus and Torah and everything. So we were talking about Maisim that I knew firsthand, and Maisim that I've heard from people who are close to me, which are like Fatzaitish Moifsim, you know, with Ruach HaKodesh and everything. And so the fellow who asked me if I could tell him maybe the biggest nest or the biggest hell that I know that Moshe brought about. So I tell him, yeah, I tell you exactly what it is. And then they can go over to listen to it. So I told him the biggest hell is the fact that he created the Rav Moshe. The fact that he was able through Avoda and through Asmoda and through Midas and Yerushalayim and everything that produce a human being who has such shleimus. That's the avoda that's biodenu. Understand? To resist the temptation to do differently and to just keep on fashioning that Adam HaSholem from the raw material that the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us. And so the sort of arena within which all this activity has to take place is an arena which is given to us to be able to take the material which otherwise would not end up being toiv, and to make it, to turn it into toiv, to prevent it from deteriorating and becoming ra and ending up with the wrong results. I'll tell you. I'll say over here a word that I said in Parshas Miketz. Actually, it runs through Parshas Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash. All three said this in a row. I hold this. It's a marvelous, marvelous word. We find that I'm sure I said it here more than once. Probably in each of these sedges. It says in Parshas Vayeshev that the brothers were very angry and bitter when Yosef HaTzadik came with Chaloimus, and he came saying that how the Chaychovim HaMeshtachvim Loi and the Alumim HaMeshtachvim Loi. Right? So what did they taina? They said, HaMolech Timloch HaLayna V'Moshel Tim Shel Bona. So they hated him. V'Yasif Loitz Nayasa. In Parshas Miketz, it says, the Yosef, who HaShalot Al Ha'oretz, who HaMashpir L'Chol Am Ha'oretz. Says that Yosef said, "Va'ata al teyotzvu, v'yichav ve'enechem, ki l'mich yoshlachani l'kim l'fnechem." I'll tell you. I'll show you a hafu dikirayin in those three mekaymes. Boysai, we speak about kings, right? A lot of stories about kings, and here in the Parshas Miketz, you have about Paro with his chaloimus and the chartumim, and Yosef being given power and all that kind of business. There's a whole story all about kings. You heard a lot about kings today. Kings like relics of some past, and they're just ceremonial creatures, except when they do bad, like the emperor of the Central African Republic, or king, and some people like that. Give you a little picture of what some of the no good kings used to be like. But what is the king really supposed to be doing with himself all day long? Huh? Take care of the country. He's not supposed to stand in front of a mirror and dress himself up, even though it says Meloch B'Yofi, that's part of his achrayas. The king is supposed to take care of the country. So the king has a tremendous achrayas. He carries responsibility for everything. He has no life. And like David HaMelech sat down to learn Gishmak, and he sat the kinar above, hanging above David's head, played a little. It was like an alarm clock when the Ruach Tzoynes came in Chatzos, so he had a little tune. David HaMelech jumped out of bed and sat down and learned Torah and sang Shiras with his Shbachis. And before long, the door was knocked on. Knock, knock. Who was there? Government officials came in. And they had all kinds of requests. Am chasrichan leparnosed, what are we going to do with the military situation? Abdel Melech was busy. And then he had to sit and didn't tire. He didn't have a second. So the Melech carries a tremendous achrayis. That is if he's doing his job as a Melech. But if he doesn't do his job as a Melech, so then he does like these other kings do. They'll play polo and chop people's heads off and have pictures painted of them and do all kinds of harmful and dangerous things that make everybody's life miserable except his own, and eventually his own becomes just as miserable too. And all he does is to enjoy the power and the fact that he could step on people's heads and make them smaller than him, and he has to remind himself constantly, right? I'm the great this and this. But there were Melochim who understood their real role as people who carry the achrayas. The buck stops by them. The main achrayas for the country, for every little bit, falls on the Melech. I always point to the Pasuk in Kehelas. The Pasuk in Kehelas says, "The Yisrael Eretz Bakoilhu Melech Lesode Neavod." Yisrael and Eretz, the mile of one country over the other. What's the mile of a country? Some countries have miles. Some countries, we call them third world countries, right? Or like we say, we're very generous, that's beautiful. Whoever came up with this phrase belongs in a history of book all of his own. Developing countries, right? Developing, more than a mile. It means countries that haven't developed yet, and we hope someday they'll develop. And we imagine as if they're in the process of developing. They may be developing the wrong way, going down instead of going up. But whatever it is, that's countries, and they don't seem to get off the ground. Why is it? Burundi was around for a long time, and Rwanda was around. and they'll take the history books that were written up to serve the, you know, like we call that, the ethnic community. So, and they have it in high schools, and everybody sees them lately. And they'll tell you about how there was a kingdom of Mali, and a kingdom of this, and Mauritania, and all these kingdoms. But nothing ever changed. It got worse, it never got better. What happened? Why is one country better than the other? Why does one country develop and the other one doesn't develop? As the Yisra Neretz Bakoil Hu, the mile of a land, Bakoil, is in everything. That means the whole system. The whole system functions together. But the last three words tell you how it works, this Bakoil. Yeah? Bakoil is a difficult word, you know. Vashem Be'eretz Avraham Bakoil, Chazal have a big machlokes, what's Bakoil? But here the Pasuk has Rachmanus on us and tells us what's Bakoil. Melech l'sodeh ne'avod. The king is meshubit to the farmer. You heard? The king is meshubit to the farmer. This peasant, illiterate peasant farmer, who sits among the chickens and the cows all day long, and he has, and he's a nobody, when he petitions the king and he says, I can't sell my eggs and my milk or my corn unless I have a road that leads from my farm to the town, so I should be able to transport my goods. So the king is mechuyev to go and take, build him a road. Yeah, that's what I said. And if they say that the price fell and I'm going to lose all my money, the farmer comes and says, I wouldn't be able to make parnosa this year. So the king is mechuyev to intervene in the economical system and see that things go right. Yeah, that's all the chaylut. The melech l'soda nevod. And if the melech realizes this is and he's meshubet to the soda, so then the whole country functions. It's bakoilu. Everybody is part of that tremendous, grandiose plan. But once the people are, this tribal chieftain is trying to be the big boss and chew up all the others, and the other one is trying, so it's just a bunch of, you know, bigger monkeys that are trying to be the biggest one in town. That's such a kingdom will never succeed. It'll fail and fail and fail and fail with all the boys. And once there's a tradition of things like that, so the tradition will remain fixed and unchanged. It'll just be a repetition. The new big hancho that comes in is just nothing more than a copycat who's mimicking the antics of the old hancho. And it'll just to be a repetition of failure. So there has to be an achrayus of melech l'sodeh nevod. It's the most beautiful phrase that you ever heard in your life. Melech l'sodeh nevod. The king has that achrayus to the farmer, to the field. That's what makes a country great. For Yisrael Neretz Bakoil. Yeah, Rabbi said. But the king has to realize that role. There are two types of melochim, right? The one melech is the melech who realizes that the king carries achrayas, and the other melech is the melech who uses the office of malchus to pounce on people's heads and to show that he's bigger and to make the other people small, to remind them constantly that he's on top and they're on bottom, and to control their lives and take away their money and take away their freedom and make the whole world miserable except for himself and for those chanofim who are around him, who are able to share in the gezel that he gathers. Okay? That's the difference between one king and another. When Yosef's brothers asked him, they had a Mordekish Kasha, HaMolech Timloi Choleinu Im Moshel Timshol Bonu. You expect to be a king? What kind of king? A Moshel. Why else would you have a Yetzirah to become a king? So you want to be a Moshel, we should bow down to you, right? And you'll be meshaved us, and you'll rule over us. You'll make us miserable, like that king they found in the hole in the earth last week. So he spent the former part of his life making everybody miserable, standing and killing and destroying, you know, and building up huge palaces. Why? Because it was Moshel Timshel, right? So Parshas Miketz, Rabbi Say, it describes to you what Yosef was doing as king. Yeah. B'yosef hu ha-shalat al ha-oretz, he was the ruler over the land. Yes. Hu ha-mashbir l'chol ha-oretz. You know what he was doing as ruler? He was handing out food to the whole country. Yes. He stood all day long like a grocer in the grocery store, and he handed out food to everybody. Yes. Hu ha-shalat al ha-oretz. Hu ha-mashbir l'chol ha-oretz. Yes. So that he was a king who was really a servant to the people. Right? Even though he told them you have to do this and have to do that, but Sof Kol Sof was L'Tayvosam. His whole Malchus was a Malchus of Shimush, it was a Melech L'Sod and Evan. In Meiland and Parshas Vayigash, when the Shvatim came, what the Shvatim said, what did Yosef tell them? He said, Va'ato al Tayotzvu, you were so upset over my Malchus. Al Tayotzvu, you see yourself, there's nothing more to be upset over. Why? Ki L'michyo Shlachani Elkim L'fneichem. Is that what was for a melech? I'm such a melech that's handing out michya to people. No, from such a kind of melech you have to be afraid, you have to worry, you have to be upset. Like, yeah, such a kind of melech is a matona, you could sit back, ruig, and be happy, and take care of yourselves, and you have no worries. All your worries, they fall on top of the melech's head, finished. So the melech is all day and all night busy with your worries, and you can sit ruig and do nothing. So that's kimba. Ato al teyosfu, al yicha b'nechem, kilo michyo shlachani elokim l'fneichem. It's a little different than the Pashtetaych. But kilo michyo shlachani elokim l'fneichem is a taych. What kind of melech am I? Yeah. I'm a melech of the michyo. A melech to provide life for people. So, that's to you said we should learn from these Yisoides. We talk about the Nes of Chanukah. Like I told you, the Nes of Chanukah has to do with the Sinyan of Malchus. There were Melochim, right? The Chashmonoi became Melochim, Yanei Melochim, and so on. But Faket, that kind of thing brought problems to Klal Yisrael. It didn't bring solutions. What created the Nisim was the fact that there was a family that was loyal to Klal Yisrael. And that was loyal to their Ribbono Shel'Olam, and that was loyal to the Torah HaKadosh, and that never wavered a ki hu zeh in their hakorah of the purpose in life, realizing and knowing every single second what their existence on this world was, and that's how come they were kedoshim, right? And tahirim and tzaddikim oiskei serasecha, and emele against people like that. So the whole powerful world of givorim, right, and rabim didn't stand a chance. Because the Giborim and the Rabbim are bottled Kafir the Yara, the people who are Giborim Chayil in a different way. Arze Halvona and Adire HaTorah, right? Bali Tresen, the mission of the Gemara. That's the Gvura, the Gvura HaNefesh is far, far more powerful than the Gvura HaGuf. And that's what wins in the end. Chazal Chanukah is Taka, a story of Gvura, but it's a story of Gvura HaNefesh. Yeah. And it teaches us that Gevuras HaNefesh, that's what takes the world and makes it into a world, a world of Toiv and a world of Shleimus. And the Be'ezus Hashem will be able to keep Meitzeis Chamei HaShem, Mitzrayim, Arenin, and Floyus, any of you may know.